This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, while we wait, maybe a song. Stop, stop! Why would you play that?
Blah, this is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 262 for the week of August 5th, 2019. I am Unnoticed Rain, David T. Cole, and I'm here with reading from the book of Stevie, Sarah D. Bunting.
Signed, sealed, delivered, I'm bored.
Texan benefactress, Tara Ariano.
We're cutting y'all off.
And fuck, Linda Holmes.
I didn't say it, so that's a loophole.
I was genuinely wondering about that, to tell you the truth.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great. Joining us this week, our old dear friend, Linda Holmes. Hello, Linda.
Hi,
Tara.
Yay! Hi, guys. We should note before we start, everyone except Sarah has a dog in the room with them, so you may hear dog noises. We are trying to keep it as low as possible, but you know.
Or is it a celebration of dogs?
It's true. It's a celebration of dogs.
We're here this week to talk about the Hulu adaptation of Four Weddings and a Funeral. And
excuse me. Point of order, Tara.
Yes.
It's Hulu presents a Hulu original of Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Excuse me. You're right. I'll just do a quick plot summary for people who didn't watch it, because it's quite different from the movie, which is now, oh my God, 25 years old. Holy cow. Oh. Here we go. The protagonist is Maya. She's played by Natalie Emanuel from Game of Thrones. For some reason, cast to play an American, which she is definitely not, as far as I know. She starts the series having an affair with her boss, a congressman running for Senate, and waiting out what he says is a dead marriage. But when she goes to visit her old college friend, Ainsley, Rebecca Rittenhouse from The Mindy Project, who now lives in London, along with their two other best friends, Craig, Brandon Michael Smith from You're the Worst, and Duffy, John Reynolds from Search Party, she loses her suitcase and has a chance meeting with Cash, Nikesh Patel, a finance guy who wants to be an actor. And then it turns out he's Ainsley's boyfriend. And a year later, Cash and Ainsley's is the first of the promised four weddings, but he calls it off. Around this time, it comes out that Maya's senator boyfriend was also boning his dog walker, so she ends things with him. And eventually decides to move to London, which you can't just do when you're American because of visas. But I have more complaints about that anyway.
She just doesn't go home. Are you saying you can't do that?
Guess what, Linda? You can't. Craig is dating this chavvy woman named Zara, but also finds out a big surprise from his past that strains their relationship. Duffy is an elementary school teacher who has had an unrequited crush on Maya for their whole lives. Ainsley has gotten close with her across the street neighbor Gemma, who is very jealous of Maya's older relationship with Ainsley. Those are the broad strokes. We will at least talk about the first four episodes that has, as of this record, dropped on Hulu, possibly more. Critics got seven screeners, so be warned. So I'm going to start from Linda's review, which we will link to in the show notes from NPR.org. Linda writes, there are two ways to get Maya and Cash together. You write a story between them, I quote, you write a story between them that's 10 episodes long, or you tease it once and then take a long break. The first one is better. The second is easier. This show does it the second way. So let's start with this question, Linda. Since it's clear to anyone who's ever seen a rom-com that Maya and Cash are supposed to end up together, why is this season so long?
I do not know. I mean, I think the idea was, you know, they really wanted to play into the, but there's all these friends and they all have a story. And yeah, actually, that's not what Four Weddings and a Funeral really is. The friends are kind of like dropping in and out, but they don't try to actually do a full plot for all the friends.
Yeah.
Because it's too much to follow. And it's also, it becomes very chaotic. But the funny thing is, you would think that with 10 episodes, they could flesh out all those stories. And they still don't, for some reason. Like, the Craig and Zara story to me is so dumb. And there's a moment when it turns into a story about a reality show. Mm-hmm. And I think I feel like, you know, Mindy Kaling, whose show this is, thinks that they're doing a more clever send up of reality shows than they are.
Yeah.
So that was boring. The Duffy thing is terrible. The Duffy thing is creepy and pathetic. And then it seems like it's going to get better and then it gets worse again. And
he's still got to finish up at Hogwarts. So like, what is happening?
I just didn't like any of it. I just did not like any of it. It bummed me out.
Well, Sarah, you responded with to Duffy with a groan. Let's talk about Duffy. Because in Linda's review, again, she describes Duffy's decade of pining in the way people used to think was cute. And it's so true. This is not how we're doing rom-coms anymore. And he is not appealing.
No. And I think it speaks to a perception problem that Mindy Kaling projects sometimes have. But I'll get back to that. Basically, Duffy is like doing the say anything thing.
Yeah.
Literally. And even when the show calls it out, it's clear that we're supposed to think it's charming in some kind of hapless way. From someone who thought that this behavior was controlling and fucked up even when that movie came out. And I was like one of three people who were like, but guys, like that she's his job is not okay. I mean, that reference is never going to be charming to me. And then and all the other sort of facets, if we can even say that there's plural facets of the characterization of that guy, it's the same. It's exactly what Linda said. Like maybe we used to receive this as charming or at least neutrally pitiable, but we just don't anymore. And that kind of goes into a larger issue that I had with and was the reason I quit the Mindy Project, which is, and you also see this with Gemma, that she's just an asshole and it's not cute. It's not funny. It's just this kind of, and it's on brand, unfortunately, for Kaling that there's this misapprehension of how of the proportions of like amusing and realistic that it is. And sometimes the actor can sell it. Like Ike Barinholtz, that shouldn't have existed. And it was amazing. And he's always like trooping through the back of a shot with an armload of puppies. And it's like Barinholtz. This actor is not selling it. And there are characters in this that like either she doesn't realize that they're dicks, or she does, but she's like, oh, no, that's the point, that they're dicks. Like, well, that can be a point, but that can't be the only point. And they're just, I just got to, I'm going to say 10 minutes into the second episode and realized that I was on Twitter on two different operating systems instead of paying attention. And it's like,
yeah,
Natalie Emmanuel is very charming. Cash is very charming. They do have chemistry, but this was such a, I don't know. Like, I don't know what I would do different except to not, but
right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the idea that it's like, well, now we can learn all about the friends, like, but we would have wanted to learn about those friends from the movie.
Right.
Not these people. I don't know. It just doesn't work for me. I wanted it to be better than this, but it's just not.
Yeah.
It couldn't keep my attention is the primary problem. But also there's some assholery that is not successful would be my take.
Yeah. I mean, my feeling, it took until episode 4 for me to realize that it was when we meet Fatima, who's a new love interest for Cash after the wedding breaks up. But that it took me until then to realize that Cash's was the only part of the show that it felt like anyone had given any thought to.
Right. And it's the only part that has any warmth to it as well, because when you meet Fatima, she's sort of cool, but also he has a relationship with his dad and his little brother.
Yes.
That's very warm and kind of has some humanity to it. And also is unexpected a couple of times. Mm-hmm. that I felt like I hadn't seen, you know, an endless number of versions of that. And so it was very fresh in a way that none of the rest of this was.
And there's a certain like effervescence to those moments that does not really happen in the main hookups, that when you put them side by side and you can see the disparity, you're like, well, okay, how come there are not fireworks between A and B and C and D, right, like there are between Fatima and Cash or the dad and Cash, you know, like there's so many relationships that are on the periphery that are much more compelling than the main throughfare.
I mean, even between the chaperones, between Nani and Bashir, like I would watch that show way more readily than I would watch any of the other characters, truly, because like thought was put into this because the writers, obviously, it felt, wanted to be like authentic and respectful in telling the story like of a single Muslim person in England in 2019. And then the rest of it was like, whatever. Like it's everything else about the show is just such an avalanche of cliches that, the freshness that Linda points to for me is the key of why that part works. And then it's such a small part of the show.
Yeah. And I'm all about, like, I love the fact that they brought to this idea of the big ensemble rom-com that they brought this very diverse cast. I think that's super great. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons I was so psyched about kind of what this take on it would look like, because for whatever you want to say about Four Weddings and a Funeral, that is a white movie. And I was really psyched about kind of her taking this property that I think she does truly love, and putting a completely different kind of cast into it. But then I just felt like nothing worked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not funny. Like, that's the main problem for me. It's a rom-com. First of all, I don't know why every episode is an hour. But then if you're not even going to fill that even half, even a quarter, even like less than that with jokes, like so little of it was even felt like it was trying to be funny.
Well, and the funny thing is the bit that you played at the top of the show with the organist playing that, da-da-da, that is one of the few things that I was like, that's really funny. Mm-hmm. Like that's a funny, good rom-com kind of moment.
I laughed at that, and I laughed when Zara is trying to do the cooking show live feed, and her boyfriend just comes in, did you fart? You know, because she's cooking eggs or something, and that was like a guffaw moment, and then I don't really remember that happening again after that. Not that rom-coms are uproariously funny, but certainly it seemed a little muted on that front for me.
It was.
Right, but like Tracy Wigfield, who is the other executive producer on the show, was a writer on 30 Rock. She created Great News. And then she did this, where it's like, what happened?
the ingredients are there. And I don't I don't fully understand what happened, because these people should have been able to make a better show than this. I am kind of baffled by it.
I apologize. Maybe you guys talked about this in the 2 minutes. I had to step away for reasons you'll never know. But there is one moment at the beginning of the series that just baffled me, like just kind of where the writing room was going. And that is when the stodgy English girl's name is Gemma. Is that right?
Gemma.
Yeah. Gemma is at the first wedding and she decides to do this impromptu sing-along or song,
so weird,
instead of reading a passage. And first of all, okay, yes, very tropey and everything, but that character would never do that. They did a character assassination right out of the gate. That piece of business should have been put onto somebody else, not that character. Yes. And I was thinking, watching that, like, how do you make that call so early in the show and not realize that you have put something down the wrong path?
Well, and I have slogged through more of this show. And let me tell you, if you were to see where they're eventually going with that character, you would find it even more unbelievable than that.
Okay. Wow.
The thing about that character is that they later establish, like, she's sort of disdained in her set of other, you know, rich idle women because her money comes from trade. Her dad, like, started a dog food company. So, like, on top of how absurd that moment is for any English person to do, like, that's a Zara thing. Like, she would be trying to fit in way harder. She wouldn't be trying to stand out in that way. That's A. And B, it would have been such a different moment if they had shown the audience being like, oh God, this is horribly embarrassing, like we all were watching it, I assume.
Right.
Or some bridesmaid, like, details with a butterfly net to put a stop to the shit.
This was
another issue that I was having. Like, there's just not, if you're going to go this farcy in terms of the this would never happen aspects of it in life, then it has to be funnier and it has to move faster.
Yep.
And you have to have some, like you said, reaction shots to people being like, what the hell?
Yeah. Yes.
And there's none of that. It's just like, oh, Gemma with her, you know, choir that she brought. No, not, like, well, just nothing relatable about it.
Yeah. And I felt like part of what happened was it's one of those things where instead of plot following character, character is following plot, because I feel like at that point in the story, they had decided that for plot reasons, what they were using that character for, what they were using Gemma for, was that she made Maya feel kind of awkward and like not welcome. She was making Maya feel like elbowed out, kind of. Mm-hmm. And so you can't make her seem like a total asshole or it doesn't make any sense. She has to seem like someone who Maya could be like, oh, this person is sort of a threat to me. I don't know if I belong here. I don't get along with my friends, new friends, mm-hmm. as opposed to just being like, why would my friend be friends with this person? So they totally change kind of what that character's function is over the course of all the episodes. And it's very weird. I think that's part of what's wrong with that piece of the story.
Yeah. And don't forget, like, that character has a moment a couple episodes later where she is talking like for 2 minutes about the importance of, you know, the British tradition. And if you're talking about British traditions, you know, wedding's pretty high up on the ones that you don't mess with. Mm-hmm. So it's very odd.
Well, she ends up doing a thing at the funeral that's like, not even just a hat on a hat. It's like a hat on a hat on a hat in a hat store. Like, the funeral scene is such a huge come down from the funeral scene in the movie. Like, in a way, it's not fair to compare them. But on the other hand, if you call your show Four Weddings and a Funeral, what the fuck else am I going to do? And I'm sure that all aspects of the movie don't hold up now, all this time later. But that funeral scene is very effective. And the one in this one, which I think is in episode 3 or 4, is like a gigantic embarrassment. I guess it's episode 4.
Yeah. And I think, too, there are other scenes in the movie. Like, there's a beautiful scene with Kristen Scott Thomas where she kind of confesses her feelings. And it's so specific, and the way that they do it is so sort of gentle and surprising. And that's the kind of stuff that's missing from this. In addition to the comedy, it's that kind of weirdly wistful, surprising tone that is very much a part of Four Weddings and Funeral. And also in certain places of Love Actually, which, like, half the specific references in this are not from Four Weddings and a Funeral. They're from Love Actually.
Yeah. Well, even the Gemma Maya dynamic feels like a lift from Bridesmaids, which is not even in the Richard Curtis oeuvre at all. But
right.
Can we talk a little bit about the Maya immigration story? Because Dave and I, at least, were very annoyed by that.
Look, we worked hard to get our visas, not just to have somebody just hop the pond and immediately get a job in Parliament.
You can't give it offered a job and start the next day. And you then, if that did happen, can't quit the day after that and take a job on half salary. Like, these are all considerations. And in terms of, like, all of the American friends ending up in London because they all had a year abroad and loved it so much, like, maybe Craig would be able to get sponsored by, because he works in finance, like, Goldman would sponsor him. The rest, an American is not getting hired to teach children in England. Like, it's not happening.
Especially like a fancy school. Like, no way, man.
Mm-mm.
Flibbity flu, Tara. Flibbity flu.
I agree. Well, is there anything else to talk about other than what a bummer it is?
Maybe our UK people can let us know. But is it true that the UK hates costume parties? I find that hard to believe.
There's one in Bridget Jones' Diary.
The first thing I thought of was like, Tarts at Vickers. Hello.
Oh, it's true. Yeah. And Bridget Jones. There is. Yeah.
Well, flibbity flip.
So should people watch this? I say absolutely not.
No, sadly not. Go back and watch the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go back and watch the movie. It's on Netflix.
Or Bridget Jones or Love Actually or All.
Or Notting Hill.
Mm-hmm. Or About a Boy.
or Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. All right, it is time for Around the Dial, talking about what we're watching on TV these days. First stop, Tara Ariana.
Well, I want to talk about something we watched this week that actually was funny, which was a Black Lady sketch show on HBO. This is taking over the time slot that was just vacated by Los Espookies, which we talked about previously on this podcast, which, by the way, if you loved that show and miss it, Julio Torres, who co-created it, has a stand-up special that is airing this weekend on HBO, and we've watched, and it's super funny and weird.
Is that the Shape one? My favorite Shapes. Yeah, that
was good. Yes. Yeah. So a Black Lady sketch show created by Robin Thede, who was the first Black woman writer on a late night show ever. And this was like a couple of years ago. Also a writer on the show, someone who I've praised on the show many times, Amber Ruffin, who's was a writer on Detroiters, is currently on Late Night with Seth Meyers as well. The show stars Robin Thede, Ashley Nicole Black, Quinta Brunson, who was just in iZombie as Charlie, the researcher, and Gabrielle Dennis from Luke Cage is the last big thing I saw her in, I think. It's a sketch show, obviously. The title suggests that. It has a Key and Peele-esque level attention to detail and world building and like the correct look for the sketch that I rarely have seen outside of that show. It's very distinct, even like in a 3-minute sketch. It's super specific, which I appreciate. This was Dave's favorite from the premiere. This is like a set in 1964. It's like a doo-wop band, or not a doo-wop band, just like a Motown type act. So there's a lot of dancing with this, but please play clip 2, Dave, your favorite.
I think you need to explain is there's one person that's really going off script.
Oh, yeah. Before they go on stage, one guy's like, I flipped it, try and keep up, and then this is what happens.
Holding hands in the ice cream shop. Ooh, holding hands in the ice cream shop. Ooh, of all the flavors, you're the cream of the crop. Yeah. Holding hands in the ice cream shop. A girl like you should never be alone. Come taste the flavor of my ice cream cone. Ooh, your 2 scoops leave me at a loss. I'll cover them in my chocolate sauce.
Ew, ew, ew.
Chocolate sauce. Not on the milk duds under your shirt. Ooh, ooh, ooh. We're just here to ask you out. That's what the song used to be about. So satisfy any scratch I need itching. And once a week, I let her out of the kitchen.
Wait, wait, wait.
Every night she'll make my supper. After the dishes, she'll do me and my brother.
Hey!
If she wants to, that's one option. In the myriad of things she could do. For instance, my wife is a teacher. I love you, Sheila. This wasn't my idea.
Girl, you're a stone cold fox. Capable of driving a truck. Or giving birth to our babies. Or not. Your uterus is yours to do with as you will.
Fucking you in the ice cream shop.
Oh, Jesus.
Juggle my balls in the ice cream shop.
That's it.
This has like 4 tops of choreography through all of this while the three are trying to distance themselves from the one that's going off script. Anyway, the second episode, which is airing this Friday, has a spoof on Pose with where it's a basic ball for the rest of the LGBT community. And it's like category is clinical depression and people coming out like wrapped in a blanket. It's very, very silly. Lots of excellent guest stars, Gina Torres, Angela Bassett, David Alan Greer, Larry Wilmore, Sherry Lee Ralph, Issa Rae, who is an executive producer on the show. Way more I'm forgetting. So a Black Lady sketch show. Check it out Friday nights or whenever you choose on HBO. I have a bunch of plugs. First, we are going to be covering the BH-902 revival on our 90210 podcast again with this. That starts this Wednesday, both the show and our podcast on it, because we finally got screeners for it. Linda, you also watched this. Do you want to comment on this since we're on the subject?
Yeah, I watched it and I felt like I don't know what's happening. Maybe my expectations were so low that I weirdly was doomed to like it, as I might say.
Yeah.
But there are parts of it that I actually found sort of funny. It's extremely dumb, but as I said in something that I was writing today, like, at least they were aware that there is no reason you would ever want to revisit any of those ding-dongs in terms of the characters. Mm-hmm. So at least they didn't do that, and that makes me happy.
Yeah. I liked it more than Sarah, but yeah, you will hear our reactions on the podcast
this week.
I mean,
it's not good.
No.
It's not good.
Oh, no. I agree.
Well, that I liked Jason Priestley probably the most. It was extremely disconcerting.
It's a surprise.
And I resent it, frankly.
Well, it feels kind of meta that given the storyline that she has on that show and her real life, that Tori Spelling is like selling it like the rent is due every single minute.
Yeah. There's a lot of layers that I was not expecting, for sure. So there's that on Again With This. I will also be recapping season 3 of Glow, so you can find that on Vulture. Such a good season. We'll be talking about that more on this podcast next week, but you can see those starting on Friday. And I mentioned this last week, The Sweet Smell of Succession, the podcast I'm doing on Succession with David Chen. The first episode, which is all about season 1, is up at successionpodcast.com, and the rest will start hitting on, I believe, early Monday morning is the plan. So you can check all of that out, and we'll link it in the show notes.
All right, New York Times bestselling author Linda Holmes, what do you got?
Yeah. Oh, hi. So what I'm going to talk about is just the finale of Jane the Virgin, which aired last week as we taped this. I was a Jane the Virgin person who took some time off a couple times from the show. I found it to be a show that I could dip in and out of a little bit when they were going in a direction I didn't care about. I would just stop paying attention to it for a handful of episodes. Mm-hmm. But I always was happy to go back to it. And I felt like, you know, in the great world of people being either Team Michael or Team Raphael, I was always Team Raphael. I felt like I didn't even understand how people were Team Michael. I didn't understand how that was a thing. I had a very, very black and white, one-sided approach to Jane the Virgin. And in the finale, you know, I think I'm okay spoiling at this point that in the finale, Jane married Raphael. They had a happy wedding. Everybody was together. It was very corny and very cheesy, but very happy. And I loved it. And it made me feel, I was very happy to see that show, I think, kind of stick the landing because it did have a long and sometimes uneven history just because what they were trying to do was so ambitious, which mm-hmm. I also really liked. So I liked the fact that they kind of did, they did all of this sort of, you know, they got rid of all the crime stuff and the Michael stuff and all the plot things in the second to last episode so mm-hmm. that the last episode could just be this really happy, nutty telenovela finale. Which I enjoyed very, very much. So my shouts to everybody involved in Jane the Virgin. I will miss that show. And the combination of that show and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, I feel has left a small hole in my heart, which I am still trying to fill.
Yeah, I agree.
And what do you got to plug there? You got many things to plug.
Oh, well, let's see. There's been entirely too much of me in the universe this summer, but I will plug a couple of podcasts that I was on talking about my book. I was on an episode of the Maris Review, which is Maris Kreisman's book podcast, which is a really fun conversation. Also, Bullseye with Jesse Thorne. Jesse's a wonderful, wonderful interviewer, and I talked to him about the book, and he helped connect me with the folks at a baseball podcast called Effectively Wild, which I also did. Basically, if you have a favorite podcast this summer, I probably splattered myself all over it. So just plug, plug, plug. The book is called Evie Drake Starts Over. It's essentially, now it's been out for about 6 weeks, so it's been completely forgotten by the culture, but I had a great time.
And it's wonderful. You have to read it.
Thank you.
So good.
Thank you, Tom. And it's been a ton of fun. And so that's my plug. Plug, plug, plug.
We will link to where you can buy that in our show notes as well as and all your podcast appearances as mentioned here.
I am here rather belatedly to talk about Big Little Lies. Really to ask, what was that? I mean, here's the thing. I really enjoyed watching it. But at the same time, I feel like there was no point to watching it.
Agreed.
It, Is it news that Meryl Streep is capable of playing a complicated asshat? I don't think it is. Ergo, not sure why that needed to occur. I'm not against any of the resolutions in the finale, I guess. Although Renata's violent pushback against her husband and his dumb trains happened a little unrealistically late, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I do not buy Ed's Volta bitch face solution to his and Reese Witherspoon's problems. I don't buy that Jane is all of a sudden DTF because of closure. There are a lot of things that don't work, and yet I was basically fine with all of them while not understanding why I was like, it shouldn't have worked. And yet I was okay with it because I just like looking at the show. I don't know. And what is with the courtroom scenes?
Oh God. Ugh.
Yeah, very dumb. Very bad courtroom scenes.
Like,
very bad.
Which David E. Kelly wrote these? I just, it could not have been more non-credibly self-indulgent. But I think it just comes down to like the people on screen are having a great time and yeah, they're wearing a lot of things that I spend my time sourcing on Etsy. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's enough. Like, I guess not every show has to be like this version of prestige is probably not what anyone necessarily was aiming for, but these are like very rich, famous people who don't have to be doing anything. And they're all doing this together.
Yeah.
And I don't hate it.
They should have went my original suggestion. Every season they push somebody new down a new flight of stairs yeah, and the whole mystery stuff repeats itself. I mean, it was mm-hmm, just a continuation. Yeah. It was a denouement as a season and it just doesn't really, you know, catch in the same way.
No, it feels to me like, you know, you get many of the best actresses of a generation all in the same project to make GIFs. I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? That could absolutely yeah, be it. Like, I think even the show itself doesn't believe that it should exist in a season two. So it's just spending on yeah, at, like a wardrobe from the Sundance catalog. And I guess I should be mad at it, but I don't feel like my time was wasted.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's like Ocean's 11. Ocean's 11 is a great movie, and they all had so much fun that they wanted to make Ocean's 12 just to hang out again, and it's like, fine, but, like, just start a book club. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't have to watch you do this. But the other analogy that I think I made on Dave Chan's Culturally Relevant podcast was to The Handmaid's Tale, which both of these are, like, they started at one thing and over time have turned into boy, high camp.
Show's driving me crazy.
Yeah. Like, both of these are soaps, and they need to quit having, like, airs of prestige TV, whatever the hell that may mean to you, and obviously, like, varies from person to person. But Big Little Lies is, like, so much soapier than season one that it makes me want to not go back and watch season one again, because I fear I will see all the scenes that well, only...
Yeah, and it's like if Terrence Malick made a soap. Like, here's like another cut in of this fantasy sequence of her with the pillow. Like, okay. Mm. Is there also going to be a Ben Affleck voiceover while we're looking at wheat? I mean, okay. If that's what you want to do.
High quality sick burn, Sarah Bunting.
I will watch it.
Someone is biting our daughter.
What do you got to plug there, Sarah?
Oh, boy. Well, I was going to wait to plug this until I was a little more organized, but given our guest this week, I'm just going to go ahead and announce that I am launching a podcast in which I will review and rank every single visual property in which Mr. Dennis Quaid has ever appeared.
Oh, wow.
It is called Quaid in Full.
Obviously. Yeah.
You may follow it on Twitter at Quaid in Full Pod. There is also... there is also a GoFundMe page, which we will link to in the show notes, because some of these properties need to be rented or yes, bought, or, as it turns out, printed from a single piece of film on which they exist.
Dang.
At Universal with the help of the Paley Center. God bless you guys. Thank you for the assist.
Wow.
That is not free. I am a completist. AF, as the kids totally don't say anymore. So I need a little help in the budget department. Once again, that link will be in the show notes, but the podcast is called Quaid in Full. There will be guests. There will be polls. There will be reader mailbags yelling at me for not thinking the Big Easy is that sexy. It's going to be great. I know.
I mean, the mailbag
I'm saving
opens
that guest
today.
Chair for you.
Talking mailbag.
Mm-hmm. You and Brian need to be in that guest chair for that. So yes, Quaid in Full, look out for it. Follow it on Twitter, Quaid in Full Pod.
Yay, yay, yay.
It is time for The Canon. Submitting this week, it is none other than our good friend Linda Holmes. Take it away, Linda.
Well, you guys know how much I love a silly show, and I also love a deep show, which is why I have done both the silly Brooklyn Nine-Nine and the very deep Lois and Clark on this in the canon. And so this time I'm going for something both silly and deep, which is the wonderful The Good Place. I am submitting season 2, episode 2, Dance Dance Resolution. You may remember in the canon already is Michael's Gambit, which is the finale of the first season. And this is only 2 episodes later. So in the episode Michael's Gambit, Eleanor and Chidi and Jason and Tahani discovered that they were not in the good place. They were in the bad place. And Michael reset them. And so the first episode of the second season essentially condenses the events of the first season into one episode. You go all the way from being reset to Eleanor figuring out that they're in the bad place and Michael snapping his fingers again. So this is the episode, Dance Dance Resolution is the episode in which they try out, they take you through Michael's repeated efforts to reboot them over and over again. Because every time he reboots them, Eleanor figures out that that they are in the bad place. And so in our first clip, you see how they get to one of these resets the first one of these resets that you see.
I've never survived down there. They should take Eleanor. She's a pear shape. She'd fit right in.
Oh, excuse me. You wish you could have a bite of this pear.
I'll go. I deserve to go. You guys can stay.
You're not.
No, I have to go. Well, then that's exactly why she'd be doing it.
Holy forking shirt. You guys, don't you get it? Michael is torturing us. That's why our lives have been so miserable since the moment we got here. This isn't the good place. It's the bad place.
Oh, farts.
And then he snaps his fingers. Now, any time that I get a chance to see Ted Danson say, "Aw, farts," which I just think is a funny line for the wonderful Ted Danson. That makes me happy. So Michael reboots them and continues to try to reboot the universe over and over. And he has trouble finding the balance where he's torturing Eleanor, which is his goal, but he's not giving it away that she's being tortured. And sometimes he fails to find that balance, as when her new soulmate that he's set her up with tells her that he's written her a 3-hour spoken word jazz opera.
Eleanor, less and more. Who's it for? For you, my dewdrop, cream of the crop. Top to the bop, to the bop, to the top.
Okay, no.
What?
No. No version of heaven for anyone would ever include 3 hours of this. We're in the bad place, aren't we?
Damn it. That was a real trip for biscuits, and now we're all wet, Daddy-O.
I never even got to play my stupid triangle.
That right there, by the way, is Vicky saying she never got to play her stupid triangle. She's the woman who was originally introduced to the group of friends as the real Eleanor in the first season, but now they know her name is Vicky, and she's one of Michael's demons. So what begins to happen is they accelerate the reset and reset and reset and eventually get to a very funny montage. And this is where I think this episode, one of the reasons I wanted to put it in the canon is that it plays into one of the show's strengths, which is they have the ability to, when they want to, absolutely crank up the joke density to where everything just happens very, very quickly. And so this is a very quick montage of Eleanor in different places, suddenly having the revelation that she is in the bad place and not the good place.
Holy smokes. This is the bad place. This is the bad place. This is the bad place. This is the bad place.
The pig's getting angry.
This is the bad place.
Beef, 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 beef.
That is my favorite one. So you see Eleanor saying, this is the bad place, and then her soulmate, Chidi, running across the field away from a swarm of bees, which are part of the fact that they're in the bad place. And I love that montage because it's so random. You see Eleanor in a group of monks. You see Eleanor on a farm with Chidi wrestling a pig. I think this is a show that is very philosophical, and I love the fact that it's so philosophical, but I also like it when there's a balance between that and the fact that it's very, very silly. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the peak of silliness from Michael's perspective, or the peak of disaster from Michael's perspective, is that at one point, it's not even Eleanor in one reboot who figures out that they're in the bad place. It is Jason Mendoza, who is, if you are not familiar with the show, he is a ding dong, and he is a DJ from Florida.
We keep fighting with each other. None of the TVs get the NFL Red Zone channel. My soulmate doesn't even know who Blake Bortles is. I know this sounds crazy, but I think we're in the bad place.
Jason figured it out? Jason? This is a real low point. Yeah, this one hurts.
I love this because I love the Manny Jacinto performance as Jason. I love what a lot he does playing a dope. And I think that kind of moment where he has a sudden revelation, anytime you have a really dumb guy have a revelation organically, that's the good stuff to me. So eventually there is a reboot that they get far enough into that they even though they figure out that they're in the bad place, they manage to escape and they go to the only place they know, which is Mindy St. Clair's house. And Mindy St. Clair is played by Maribeth Monroe, and she lives in the medium place. She's the only person who lives in the medium place, which is the place that Eleanor has argued should exist for people who are okay, which is what we learn a little bit about Mindy, is that she was a bad person and a good person sort of at the same time. So they get to the door and they just beg Mindy for her help. And this is Eleanor, Chidi, and also Janet is there with them.
Hi, you gotta help us. I'm Eleanor, this is Chidi. And see, we thought we were in the good place, but as it turns out...
Yeah, guys, I know. You've been here 15 times already.
What?
Did you bring the cocaine I asked for? Please tell me you somehow remembered this time. Mama needs her medicine.
We've met before? I'm Janet.
I know.
So Mindy St. Clair, unfortunately, has had the honor, quote unquote, of having them visit her many times in many previous reboots. And as you can tell from that clip, always asks for cocaine. And when I submitted the episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine that I did, we talked about Mark Evan Jackson and some of the other really good uses of supporting characters in that show. And I think this is another good example of an episode that I love because it has a character who you don't see often. She's not a regular, but Mindy St. Clair, every time she comes on, to me, that character is a very funny idea. And the performance that she gives is so just, it's so understated in many ways. She doesn't play that really huge. And that's why when she's at the door saying, did you bring me the cocaine that I asked for? It's so funny. She's just kind of like she's dressed like a 1980s stockbroker, which I think is what she is. She's some kind of 80s finance person who was, among other things, good and bad, a cocaine addict. So Mindy St. Clair reveals to Eleanor, when Eleanor and Chidi are fighting, Mindy St. Clair reveals to Eleanor that in one of the reboots, or actually in several of the reboots, Eleanor and Chidi have been romantically involved, and that she eventually put a camera to tape them having sex because just sort of for her own fun. And she shows Eleanor a very surprising videotape of Eleanor and Chidi in bed together, which Mindy St. Clair has because she's a pervert, and of Eleanor and Chidi saying, I love you, to each other. And so Eleanor has to process this. And right when you think they are in a very emotional moment, they come up with a super great joke in this clip.
How many times have Chidi and I slept together?
8 different days, but like 20 different sessions.
And how many times did we say that stuff?
Oh, only once. Oh God, I hated it. I mean, it like really killed the vibe for me. See, after I watched the porno I made starring you, I watched you talk about your feelings to cool down. It's like anti-porn.
I've only ever said I love you to 2 men my entire life. Stone Cold Steve Austin and a guy in a dark club who I mistook for Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I don't know why, but I love that line so much because it is a funny joke that one of them would be Stone Cold Steve Austin. And then the second half of the joke is even funnier. So I love that joke for that reason. And one of the reasons why I chose this episode for the canon is that there is a balance of sort of, it is an emotional story for Eleanor. But she also is, Eleanor is trying to have this emotional moment with Mindy, who is such a ridiculous character. And so I like the fact that on this particular show, they sort of undercut the emotion of it always with these very silly jokes. And I think we will talk a little bit about the fact that this is an episode that was written by Megan Amram, who's also kind of the Good Place pun generator. And so it's also an episode that's full of kind of the restaurant name puns that this show loves. And it has, as I said, very high joke density. And they get to the end, and close to the end, Michael is trying to figure out what to do. And he winds up having a conversation with Jason. And Jason Mendoza explains to a very discouraged Michael that sometimes everybody has to come together. And he tells him this story.
I was a member of a 60-person dance crew in Jacksonville. We were called Dance Dance Resolution. We resolved to dance. One day, Donkey Doug and I got into a fight because I'd framed his girlfriend for boogie board theft. So he started a new dance crew called #DougLife and immediately challenged us to a dance-off. He said, meet us inside the abandoned orange juice factory at midnight. That night, as the clock struck 12, me and my crew came together with a determination we have never shown before and slashed all their tires. It was dope. The end.
I love that story partly because I am a total sucker for the way he says it was dope. Yeah. And I don't know why.
I love the setting that is an abandoned OJ factory. Stupid but perfect.
So I chose this episode because I am such an admirer in this show of the quality that this episode really brings out, which is on the one hand, they're always thinking about both the kind of Byzantine plot that they are always trying to work their way through. And they're always dumping so much plot in an episode, which is part of why the show is ending after its upcoming 4th season. But I love the fact that an episode like this shows off the thoughtfulness of the writing, as well as the goofiness and the visual, the stacking of visual jokes. And I think other than maybe The Simpsons, I don't know of another show that is as good at putting a joke in the foreground, a joke in the background, maybe Bob's Burgers. I mean, I think live action wise, I don't know that many shows that are as good at it as this is. So although I find the kind of the knowledge of actual philosophy to be very moving at times, I also am a great appreciator of a food pun. So I submit this episode as a good example of many different great things about this goofy show. And I hope for your vote.
I'll go first. I have just a couple of points to make, and then you guys can go. Linda is right on. I'm calling this type of episode the iterative joke bonanza.
Yes.
And that sort of is the first half of this episode. And it reminds me of what is usually like a time traveling setup, usually when you get this kind of thing. Like we've seen it in, as Linda said, Simpsons. We've definitely seen in Futurama more than once where they'll revisit a scenario and there's an iteration on it. You know, in The Good Place, we're talking about how is Eleanor going to figure out this is in fact the bad place, snap, repeat, and it just gets goofier and weirder and faster as we go along. This is like one of the great examples of that for sure. And the fact that in the second half, it can have the echoes of that going through, but switch gears with going to the medium place. I think in other shows, you might have got whiplash at that moment, but the medium place is such a weird sort of place. The fact that that sort of starts and the episode kind of warms up emotionally after that is no small feat. That during the 22 minutes or whatever we're watching it, we're not getting whiplash. We're not wishing they did one more than the other. Like, it is just like this perfect imbalance episode. Linda mentioned the shops. I had to go through and write down all the new shops in this episode that were in the theme worlds that are just in it for 6-7 seconds at most. There's a there's a bagel world at the start where we have From Schmear to Eternity. Mm-hmm. There is a pasta world where you do the hokey and yokey and you get yourself some food. The pesto's yet to come. Mm. Lasagna come out tomorrow. We have some sort of baked goods world with Knish from Rose, Cake Canaveral, Biscotti Pippin, Beignet and the Jets, and my favorite, Crawler Intentions. Pretty good. There's this weird stick world where we have a hot dog on a stick, obviously, but then we have bagel on a stick, caviar on a stick, and we have steak on a stick featuring extra sticks. And my absolute favorite is one of them in the Japanese world. Well, we do have Ponzu Scheme, which is very good.
That is my favorite.
My favorite is Sushi in the Banshees, which is
also good.
Also great. I do want to leave my little contribution with a joke that was not clipped. And I thank you, Linda, for leaving it to me. I think this is one of the most understated, clever, funny jokes in The Good Place. So just listen to the end of this clip for an amazing cheaty moment.
Even your nightmares are boring.
You were so mean, Eleanor. You're just like those childhood bullies who said I would never get tenure.
It's a really good joke. It's just really childhood friends. You'll never make tenure. Really good episode for all the reasons Linda said. Very funny, has warmth, has heart, but doesn't give you whiplash in marrying those two things. And for that, I would say this definitely goes into the canon. Sarah.
My favorite world is the Chowder world. I'm not going to be run off of loving Chowder, but whoever used this episode as, in small part, a stalking horse for their hatred of Chowder, I respect that. Like, hot ocean milk with dead animal croutons, that's exactly what it is. I love it, but it is disgusting. And that there is a Chowder fountain. Like, you do wonder if someone somewhere in this creative team was not like, how can we do a show with a Chowder fountain in it? And then this is what they work backwards to. It's kind of amazing. This show eventually did get to a point which I think we all were concerned with happening, and which, frankly, it is a miracle that it didn't happen sooner, because as Linda said, they go through just like reams and eons of plot in every 22 minutes, that the car of the episode would sort of shoot past where they had built the road. And I think in season 3, one might argue that that did occur. But this, like the beginning of season 2 of The Good Place, is like, it's just perfectly done. Like, everything is in balance. And like, I love that sometimes you're being sort of walked through how these resets are working. And then occasionally they do a montage. Like, there's the montage that we heard clipped. And then, although it's a more visual thing, it's like every time Janet begs Michael not to reset her. And then she's like, yeah, I know. And then she does that weird half twirl. And then she falls face down on the sand. She's wearing a different color sort of flight attendant outfit in each one. The jokes are perfect. Ponzu Scheme, of course, is my favorite. It's one of my favorite things to just pause and look at them all. But I think the really impressive part is, what's that? I don't know who like sort of originated this line that, you know, the trick to comedy being funny and not mean is that it's not funny to the characters. Like, this isn't funny to anyone that it's happening to. Uh-huh. So, and the actor's ability to really play convincingly this battle that they're in, even though it's funny to us, the fact that it's not funny to them and they never sell it out is one of the many wonderful things about the show.
And that clip that Linda played last with the very ending where Kristen Bell is telling them about Stone Cold Steve Austin, it is really funny, but it is to her a very earnest statement, which is why it, of course, and is, she, as you're saying, even funnier.
And she reads it really smartly that, like, I think if you're trying to sort of overplay that or goose it,
no eye roll, no smirk.
Yeah, it's just like, who I mistook for Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, she puts the emphasis somewhere that you don't expect, because to her, this is a serious thing.
Yeah.
And of course, I find it funny because I used to date a guy named Steve Oxman. So any jokes about Stone Cold Steve Austin, I'm automatically like, snark. I don't think he listens to this, but if he does, hey buddy. So yeah, there's also, you know, the performance of Jason, like, it's a similar balance, because playing like a genuinely dim bulb is hard to do and still believe that this person can like breathe on his own and be allowed to drive a car. And he gets it just right.
Yeah, it's like when Baldrick finally has a plan that comes together despite himself in Black Adder. You're like, oh, that happened. Good for him.
Yeah, because it has to sometime. Otherwise, this person would not be able to, you know,
function,
right, live by himself. Yeah. So, yes, excellent presentation. Obviously, anything with, you know, farts, bees with teeth, busty Alexa, Ponzu scheme, and Stone Cold Steve Oxman. I love it. I was super glad to revisit this, and it made me actually excited to see how they're going to wrap everything up. So well done, Linda, and well done, show. Tara.
I think I have used this space in the past to say that The Good Place had disappeared up its own ass to a degree where I don't know if I'm going to watch the last season. I mean, it'll be fine without me. I'm just saying. But this might be, I won't say the last great episode, because I think the season two finale is good too, but this is like, for me, the climax from which it maybe started for me its decline into like nothing mattersville too much. And I realize this is ridiculous to say about an episode where it's like nothing but resets. But as Dave said, it's an a joke iteration machine where it's just like, this is you exhausting the possibilities of this phase of your premise while you still can. And I'm happy to be here for it because it's fucking ridiculous.
It's hard to match that, though.
30 Rock and Great News as in the Four Weddings and a Funeral discussion. Those were probably the only two other live action shows I can think of that are this joke dense. And it's so fun to watch. No one has mentioned the part of Michael's own recap of his many resets where he's like in sweatpants and he's so depressed. Oh, and he's like just going on and on. And then we pan around to see Eleanor sitting right there listening to the whole thing. He's like, this one doesn't even count. He's got his bow tie on like with a t-shirt. That was maybe my favorite part, but yeah, it's super fun to watch. We've already hit all the high points, I think, so excellent presentation, and I was happy to watch it again.
Great. Well, let's make this official. I am going to say yes, this is canon material. Sarah D. Bunting?
Bees, yes, absolutely.
Tari Ariano?
Me too.
All right. That means The Good Place Season 2, Episode 2, Dance Dance Resolution. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time to find out our winner and a loser of the week. Tara has the winner.
I have a mean one and a nice one. I couldn't decide between them, so I'll go with a mean one first because it's really me, the winner. But Nico Tortorella has been cast to star in a third show in the Walking Dead-iverse, which makes no difference to me except that it may mean that Josh is finally getting written out of Younger, which is good news because they've really exhausted the possibilities of that character, I feel. And the more Josh hangs around Younger, the less it makes sense for that character to do so. So bye.
By the way, they announced the title of that third one. It's called Oh No, The Walking Dead.
Very good. But I also wanted to mention Ali'i Carvalho. She voiced Moana and Moana. She was also in Rise, watched only by me and Adam Grossworth. Hey, Adam. She has just been cast as Ariel in ABC's Little Mermaid Live. And the reason that I love this is just like ABC / Disney is like, Ariel's not white. Deal with it. And I'm here for that because people who are going to go on and on about this Ariel and the one in the live action movie not being a redhead like in the original, like, who cares? This one gives us this amazing singer as Ariel and Queen Latifah as Ursula. Like, why are you mad? This is amazing. So congratulations to both of them.
Loser of the week.
Well, actually just these two, because I'm sitting here eating popcorn. Living in a SAG household as I do, Gabrielle Andrea Zuckerman-Carteris is suing Matthew Modine and Membership First, exclamation point, there isn't one, but there should be, because that, like, cadre challenged her as the president of the Screen Actors Guild. The back and forth keeps getting messier. There was a cease and desist. There were accusations of defamation. They've both made videos and sent them around.
I gotta go read up on this. Got to.
Yeah, it will all be in the show notes. Now Carteris and my birthday mate, Matthew Modine, are accusing each other of misleading members. There's like history between these two factions. And then if you read the story on Deadline and you read the comments, like, of course you should never read the comments, but this time make an exception because Frances Fisher, who has been stirring shit up on the Matthew Modine side for weeks now, is in the comments, like, you know, raising hell like it's her job.
P.S. to that, she was also on social media last week because it was reported that Marianne Williamson got mad at someone in CNN for knocking too harshly on her dressing room door before it was time for her to go out in the debate. And someone tweeted this and Frances Fisher like responded to them like, actually, as someone from the theater, I can tell you there is a right and wrong way to knock. I was like, someone hired this woman because she's bored. Anyway.
Yeah, like, seriously. I just remember her Manson lamps and that episode of Law and Order where she's like holding up the bracelet and you could just hear like the horror strings like, oh, girl. Go volunteer somewhere. This is not this is not a good look.
This
We're
isn't your
in
job.
Love.
I tried to follow that and the links you sent, but it actually gets quite Byzantine quite quickly as far as like
it's
what every
really complex.
Yeah. And I was like, all right. I'm like, who's the bad guy here? Who's the good guy?
It's hashtag fucking actors, if you want to boil it down.
I'll try and find some kind of digest of all of Cole's the issues notes. For the show notes.
Yeah. Cliff's notes. Sorry, Americans. All right, guys. Do you know what time it is? Sure. Game time. We have the third game time of the season coming your way. Season scores are Tara 2, Sarah 0, Value Guest 0. Today we are playing Pilot Test from Erica, who earns herself an extra credit topic of her choosing. In this game, you will attempt to identify scripted TV shows based on the title of the pilot or its closest neighbor. I'll explain that a little bit later. There are up to four pieces of information at your disposal and will operate on an inverse point system. So here's how it goes. First clue I'm going to give you, pilot title as promised. Guess the show there, 4 points. Next clue is the last episode title.
Oh.
3 points. Next clue after that, the number of seasons it ran and the network on which it ran, 2 points. And if we get to the last clue, that is a main credits cast member, not usually the first build. And after that, we'll give you 1 point. But you only get to guess once. So ask for the clue if you need it.
Okay.
Guess when you know it. All right. The earlier you're the guess, the more points you're going to get. So here's an example. The pilot title is called Winter is Coming.
Game of Thrones.
That would be worth 4 points, yes. Now, I gave you a finale title. It's The Iron Throne. I would tell you it ran 8 seasons on HBO, and it starred Maisie Williams, let's say, for our last clue. Okay. So that's how this game is going to run down. Note, Erica says, last episode titles refer to the title of the last episode of the main run of the show, not revivals, not reboots, okay. or not TV movies.
Gotcha.
Okay,
got
so
okay.
just like the original chunk of the show. All right, Tara, steel meal situation, please.
I have two steel meals, end of situation.
All right, that's it. Let's throw it to Picky to see who's going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. So Linda's going to go first, and then we'll go then to Tara, then to Sarah. There are three rounds, 42 questions, and a tiebreaker. Are we ready to play pilot test?
Yes.
All right. Are. Round one consists of shows where the pilot episode is not called pilot. So these are the actual non-pilot titles of the first episode. Class of Beverly Hills. What's the show?
Class of Beverly Hills.
Yes.
I'm going to say Beverly Hills 90210.
And you are correct, and you just got 4 points. Tara, Sarah, do you know the last episode? Just for shits and giggles, you know what that's called?
Oh, it's only on a list that we've been looking at like 500 times. But no, I don't remember.
It applies to you guys for sure when you get to it. It's called Ode to Joy.
Oh.
All right, Tara Ariano, here is your first clue. This is the title of the pilot episode. It is okay. The Good Son.
The Good Son.
The Good Son. Guess now for four. Ask for the next clue. Those are your choices.
The Good Son. Who's got a good son?
Guess her,
I'll
guess
take her the clue. Hint.
All right. The finale title is called Good Night, Seattle.
Frasier.
And you ought to know, you're Frasier.
I'm Frasier.
3 points. Sarah D. Bunting, your pilot title, City of.
I'm going to guess Angel.
You are correct. 4 points. Nicely done. Back to Linda Holmes. The pilot is called Encounter at Farpoint.
Encounter at Farpoint.
Yes.
I need a hint.
All right. Your finale title, All Good Things.
Oh.
See what they did there? All Good Things.
I know this. Oh, I know this. I know this one. All Good
Things. Definitely a popular show.
Yeah. Give me another one.
7 seasons of this show. It was not on a network. It was syndicated. That's a big clue.
Yeah, that's a good clue.
Syndicated.
Well, yeah. Encounter at Farpoint is the pilot. All Good Things, the finale. It ran for 7 seasons and was syndicated.
Nope, I need my 1 point.
All right, your 1 point clue. LeVar Burton was one of the opening credits cast members of this show.
Oh, it's Star Trek The Next Generation.
It is for 1 point, yes.
I'm so sorry to everyone who's currently writing me angry email.
Okay, back to Tara.
Yeah.
Strange Love. The pilot is Strange Love.
Hint.
Thank You is the finale title. Thank You.
Fucks. Hint.
7 seasons on HBO. Strange Love, Thank You, 7 seasons, HBO.
Oh, God. True Blood?
That's good for 2.
Oh, shit.
Wow, nice.
Sarah D. Bunting, Give Me a Ring Sometime. Give Me a Ring Sometime.
Give Me a Ring Sometime. I'm going to be mad, but I don't know. Hint.
Finale, One for the Road.
Cheers?
Correct. 3 points.
Amazing.
Wow. Nicely done.
Yeah, your
great
next clue was
job.
11 seasons on NBC. I bet you would have got it then, yeah. If not. Back to Linda. I think this is going to be a 4-pointer, guys. Love is All Around. Love is
Mary
All Around.
Mary Tyler Moore.
Correct. Hey. 4 points. Tatara, Legacy.
Legacy. Hint.
Finale, Final Approach.
Enterprise?
Incorrect. Shit. 8 seasons, NBC, Tony Shalhoub. Wings.
Oh.
Wings.
Wings.
Sarah D. Bunting, your pilot title, Night Work.
I'm sorry, what is it?
Night Work, as in not the day. Night work? Yes.
Okay. Hint, please.
The Blessed Dark is the finale.
This is a tough one. Hint.
3 seasons on Showtime.
Hint.
Timothy Dalton. Night Work, The Blessed Dark, 3 seasons on Showtime, starring Timothy Dalton.
Jeez.
Penny Dreadful?
Penny Dreadful.
Nice. Oh.
At least I got one point. Shit.
Penny, for your thoughts. Your thoughts are, I got 1 point. Linda Holmes. Movin' In. Not moving. Movin' In.
Movin' In. Hint.
The Front Page is the title of the finale.
Oh, hint.
Okay, here's a good hint. 7 seasons on NBC, 1 season on ABC. Switch networks for its last season.
Oh, this is embarrassing.
It's not. It's not. It's embarrassing if you don't get it after the next clue, I will say.
Yeah, next clue.
Todd Bridges.
Oh, Different Strokes.
Different Strokes. 1 point. Tari Ariano.
Networks. Yes.
The pilot, 24 hours.
Hint.
Finale and In the End.
Hint.
15 seasons NBC.
ER?
Oh, yeah.
2 points. Sarah D. Bunting. Get Me a Lawyer.
Hint.
But You Don't Do That Anymore.
Hint.
5 seasons on FX. Get Me a Lawyer, But You Don't Do That Anymore. 5 season FX.
Justified?
Tate Donovan was your last clue. That is...
Is it Damages?
Damages.
Oh, yeah. That thing.
The forgotten FX show.
Mm-hmm. Back to Linda. Getting towards the end of round one. Your pilot title, Genesis. Yeah.
Genesis. Mm-hmm. Let's see. It's probably not the Phil Collins Music and Variety Hour.
Nope.
I will say, I will require a hint. Genesis.
Finale, Mirror Image.
Nope, hint.
5 seasons on NBC.
Oh, I was way off.
Me too.
Genesis. Nope, hint.
Starring Dean Stockwell.
Oh, Quantum Leap.
Quantum Leap, 1 point. Correct.
I was thinking Orphan Black.
I was thinking Fringe.
Those titles do not give away Quantum Leap in any way. Tara Ariano, Gone for Good.
Gone for Good.
G-O-O-D-E.
Okay. It's probably not about Matthew Good, unfortunately. Hint.
Forgive Us Our Trespasses.
Joan of Arcadia, taking a shot. Damn it.
You missed. It was 7 seasons on NBC, Homicide, Life on the Street.
Oh, nope. Tough one.
Sarah D. Bunting, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes.
Hint.
Person to Person is the finale title.
Hint.
All right, here's a good hint coming at you. 7 seasons AMC.
Wait, really? No, that can't be right. Breaking Bad?
Incorrect. Last clue, Elizabeth Moss.
Batman.
The other one, yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. All right. Everybody's last clue of round one coming at you. First with Linda, My First Day. My First Day is the pilot title.
Scrubs.
You are correct. Scrubs,
wow,
4 points.
Wow, nice.
Nicely done.
Tara.
Yes.
This is question 17.
It's pretty
cool.
Your pilot title, Hellride.
Hellride.
Yes.
I mean, I want to say Hell on Wheels, but I'm not going to. Hellride.
Golden Girls.
Supernatural.
Golden Girls. Took a swing. You missed. Yeah. The finale was Let Our Angel Live. We already had Angel. This was Charlie's Angels. Charlie's Angels. All right, okay. Last clue before the first score breaks. Sarah D. Bunting, Truth Be Told.
Hint.
All the Time in the World is the finale.
All the time in the world. All the time in the world. Oh, shit. I'm going to be mad, but hint.
5 seasons, ABC. Truth Be Told, All the Time in the World, 5 seasons on ABC. That's the American Broadcasting Corporation.
Yeah. That's the rumor.
Not the Australian one. I mean, you know, in case you were wondering.
The Practice.
With the last clue, probably would have helped you. Victor Garber. Victor Garber.
Oh.
Alias. And that's round one, our longest round. Tara, the scores, please.
It's a close game for some of us. I have 7 points. Sarah has 8 points. Linda has 15 points.
Ooh.
All right. So, Tara, you're in the basement? Guess what I found, Tara? I found the Trivial Pursuit questions. That means you...
What?
Oh! ...are in the Grossword Equalizer Challenge Zone. Oh, it's been a while, so let's remind everybody. I am holding in my hand a Trivial Pursuit TV box question from the mid-90s, we believe. I will read you the category and the clue. You get 3 of the 6 correct. You get a bunch of points. We'll give you 4 points today. All right? We'll give you 4 points.
No, you should get 8 points.
I know you should, but that's too many, so I'm giving you 4.
I agree.
Classics. What branch of the military did Bob Captain Kangaroo Keshen serve in?
The Navy. Sorry.
He served in the Navy, says Tara, and you are incorrect. The Marines.
Wow.
Sitcoms. Whose first words to Tony Nelson were, "Thou may ask anything of thy slave master"?
Ooh. Yeah. Genie. P.S. Yikes.
Mm-hmm. Drama. How many years did Gunsmoke run on CBS? 10, 15, or 20? Got about 20. a 1 in 3 chance. Correct.
Okay.
You need 1 of these 3 to get your points.
Okay.
What animated series apartment building janitor is Henry Orbit?
The Jetsons.
You are correct, and you just got your 4 points. Congratulations. All right, so after that, the scores, please, quickly.
Okay, Sarah has 8, I have 11, Linda still has 15.
All right, and that's the power of the equalizer, putting you into second place. Now we're back to the real game with Linda. This is round 2. We're talking about the second episodes of the series, because these are all shows that had pilot as their pilot.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
The Apology, Linda, The Apology.
Sports Night.
You are correct. 4 points, bam.
Nicely done.
Tara Ariano.
Yeah.
Uncertainty Principle.
The Big Bang Theory.
Ooh, that is a decent guess. You're on the right track.
A very good guess.
That is Num3ers.
Oh, of course. I think Big Bang Theory has like longer titles. It's like something and the something.
Yeah. Like Clone High.
Yeah.
Sarah D. Bunting, Bypass. Second episode of this series is Bypass.
Bypass.
Yes.
Don't know. Hint.
Okay. The last episode of this series is known as The Last One.
Hint.
6 seasons, NBC.
Seinfeld?
William Daniels was your last clue.
Oh.
Guesses could go 2 ways.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah.
Oh, right.
It actually is St. Elsewhere.
It is St. Elsewhere, yes.
Oh, fuck.
All right, back to Linda. 4B or not 4B? Number 4, letter B or not 4B?
Hint.
Moving Day is the finale.
Moving Day. Hint.
12 seasons ABC.
Growing Pains.
David Caruso, NYPD Blue.
Ooh. I was so close.
The Engagement is the second episode of this series, Tara. The Engagement.
Hint.
One Flew Out of the Cuckoo's Nest, the finale.
Hint.
Seven Seasons, NBC.
Chuck? Damn.
Last clue, Estelle Getty.
Oh my God.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting. Post hoc ergo propter hoc.
What accent was that?
That was my old Englishy Latin accent.
Transylvanian.
I was going to say.
Post hoc ergo propter hoc.
I was going to say, it's some Scottish logic there.
Look, oh, yes. That's just the way they spoke back
Willie
then.
Doesn't
you
care.
Don't have the recordings. I do.
The West Wing?
Post hoc ergo propter hoc.
The West Wing.
Yes. You get 4 points, but I don't want to give it to you.
Wow, very good.
Linda nice. Holmes, not with my sister, you don't.
Uh-oh.
Not with my sister, you don't.
Not with my sister, you don't. Yeah. Family Ties.
Holy shit.
Oh. What?
If you didn't get it then, I bet you would have got it on the second
clue. My God.
The finale, Alex doesn't live here anymore.
Yeah.
Tara. The yes. Last Stand.
Is episode 2? That seems very early for a Last Stand.
Yeah. The show was 3 episodes long.
Hint.
Back to the Future is the finale. Oh.
Something with time travel.
Something with time travel.
It's not choices. Outlander because that's still on.
All right, I'm going to guess you want the clue.
Yeah, hint.
4 seasons on the WB, and that's an old network. It stands for Warner Brothers.
Right. Oh, Felicity.
Felicity, there's a show of time travel we always forget about.
Yep.
That's 2 points.
Not me.
Back to Sarah. Cool Change. Cool Change.
Cool Change. Hint.
Immortality is the finale.
Dawson's Creek.
15 seasons CBS. CIS.
CSI.
Also known as CSI.
CSI Mothership is what I meant to say. Dancing in the Dark for Linda. Dancing in the Dark.
Hint.
In Dreams Begin Responsibilities.
Damn it, Picky.
Oh, Sarah knows it. There's a clue.
Sarah doesn't know many shows.
Wait, what was the first one?
Dancing in the Dark was your second episode. In Dreams okay. Begin Responsibilities was your finale.
Is it The Sopranos?
One season ABC, My So-Called Life.
Oh, God, I should know that.
The other one Sarah knows.
Yeah, the other one.
The other show Sarah would jump at.
Tara, Square Peg.
Hint.
To Sirloin with Love.
Hint.
13 seasons on Fox.
Oh my God.
13 seasons.
Yeah.
On Fox?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're kick yourself when you realize what's going on here.
Will I?
Yeah. Probably.
Is it Married with Children?
Nope.
I didn't think it was on that long.
It is a show about selling propane and propane accessories.
Oh, of course.
King of the Hill.
Oh, of course.
King of the Hill.
Square Peg.
That was a good guess, though.
Right. Yeah.
Square Peg, sure.
Sarah D. Bunting, your after the pilot episode is called Deep Throat.
Of course it is. Hint.
Last episode, The Truth.
Oh, of course.
Is this about a paper that a lot of parents read? Hint, please.
9 seasons on Fox. Deep Throat, The Truth, 9 seasons, Fox.
Truth, 9 seasons on Fox. Hint.
History's greatest acting robot, David Duchovny.
Oh, the X-Files.
1 point. Back to Linda. Strange visitor, brackets, from another planet.
That is Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman.
Yeah, as soon as I saw that, I said, oh, Pinky. You little scamp. Tara.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
Brains, know-how, and native intelligence.
Native intelligence?
Native, yes.
Okay. Hint.
The finale, Tranquility Base, brackets, Our Town.
Oh, my God. Firefly?
Five seasons, CBS, John Corbett, Northern Exposure.
Northern Exposure.
Oh, damn.
Chris sure. in the morning.
Back to Sarah D.
Chris
Bunting.
The
Will. The Will. First episode was the pilot. Second episode was The Will.
Oh, The Will. So someone kicked this off by dying, but I'm not sure who. Hint.
Finale. Everyone's Waiting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 6 feet under.
Famous finale. That is good for 3 points. Everybody's last Cannon question, round two, submission. Coming at you.
Yep.
For Linda Holmes, we have Market to Market.
No idea. Hint.
All right. This is probably the best finale hint of the game. Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen.
Oh, MASH.
MASH is correct. That's good for 3 points. How many seasons did MASH run for? Anybody remember?
12?
Given how many people, given how, like, it's a reputation for being such a long-running show, it's 11 seasons, I would have guessed.
More. I was going to say 11 or 12, yeah.
Tara, your last question around two. Mm-hmm. The Quicksand Girlfriend.
Hint.
Brothers. Oh, I'm sorry. Brothers and Sisters, to pronounce that correctly.
Hint.
3 seasons, ABC.
Oh, happy endings.
You are correct. Should all right, here's our last question of round two for Sarah D. Bunting. Cats in the Bag.
Cats in the Bag. Hint.
Felina.
All right, this is Breaking Bad.
That's the Breaking Bad one, yeah.
I was just going to say, and the bag's in the river. Yeah.
3 points on that one. Scores, please, Tara Area.
Okay, I have 15. Sarah has 19. Linda has 15, 20,
20, 30. Oh, shit. All right, well, let's do it anyways.
Tara.
All right, Tara, you can get 4 points if you get enough of these classics. What president lost confidence in the teleprompter when it malfunctioned during a campaign stop?
Nixon.
That's a decent guess. Eisenhower was the correct answer.
Okay.
Sitcoms. What family bid adieu to the town of Sibley before heading west? S-I-B-L-Y.
The Ingalls?
That is also a good guess. The Clampets. The Clampets. Okay. Drama. What was Mary Hartman, retitled to when Louise Lasser left?
Oh, it was the name of the town, I think, but I don't know what it is.
You are correct in that part. It was Forever Fernwood.
Oh, right.
All right, so now you're going to get all these.
Okay.
And decent chance, I think. What variety show did Don Pardo graduate to after Jeopardy bit the dust? Jeopardy.
Saturday
Mark
Night Live.
Mark 1, I would imagine. Correct. Stars, the answer will be...
Person.
Oh, no, it's about stars. The answer is actually not a person. All right. What network's newscasters included Jessica Savage, Jane Pauley, and Connie Chung?
NBC.
Correct. It all comes down to the wild card. What was the last of the big three networks to lengthen this evening news telecast from 15 to 30 minutes?
CBS.
CBS, you are incorrect.
Dang.
It was ABC.
Oh,
ABC. Okay.
Close but no cigar. All right, let's do it. This is round three. These are also second episodes of shows because the first episode is either the title of the show or has the title of the show in it.
Okay.
Okay.
Could give you a hint now and then. A very short round, only 2 questions each, starting with Linda.
Oh, shit.
The Stakeout.
Parks and Recreation.
Incorrect. The finale is called The Finale. It ran nine seasons on NBC. That was Seinfeld. Guessed incorrectly earlier.
Nine seasons? Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Tara Ariano?
Yep.
Deep Water.
Hint.
Tell Him Something Pretty.
The Wire is not the answer.
And that is your guess. it was on HBO. It only ran for three seasons until it was recently not so greatly wrapped up in a movie, Deadwood. I believe Deadwood. The pilot is called Welcome to Deadwood. Sarah D. Bunting. 46 long.
The Sopranos.
4 points.
There you go, Bunty.
Thanks, Pinky.
Linda Holmes. Presidential Fever.
Hint.
It Ain't Over Till It's Over.
Hint.
Seven Seasons NBC.
Oh, hint.
Took a turn.
Michael Conrad.
Who?
Michael
Hill
Conrad.
Hill Street Blues?
Yes, Hill Street Blues.
Nice.
1 point.
All right.
Tara, your last question. Models and Mortals.
Charmed?
Good guess.
Damn.
Last episode was called An American Girl in Paris.
Sex in the City.
Sex in the City, correct. All right, here's our last question of regulation for Sarah D. Bunting. The second episode of this show was called The Review. And frankly, we're going to be disappointed if you get the answer correctly.
Oh.
Jeez.
For reasons you'll see at the end.
Okay, hint.
The End. Yep. The finale is called The End.
Hint.
Eight seasons, HBO. The Review, The End, 8 seasons, HBO. We really don't want you to get the correct answer.
Oh, okay. I have a guess.
Arliss?
Is it Entourage?
It's Entourage. Is All right. That is regulation. End of game. Scores, please, Tara.
All right. I remained in the basement with 15. Sarah finished with 23. Linda is our victor with 31.
Wow. Well done, Linda.
Nice.
Yay. Right. Well, you did give me Sports Night and Superman, so.
I didn't.
Amazing.
You can thank Picky. Let's reuse our tiebreaker. We'll play for a steel meal for future use. Linda will be playing for future value guests.
Yeah.
I will read the clues slowly. Shout out your answer whenever you want.
Okay.
Here we go. Aperitif.
Hannibal.
You are correct.
Okay. Sarah.
Yeah, Sarah.
Valued guest.
Valued guest.
Well played, Holmes.
Yes, nicely
thank
done.
Thank you, guys.
A decisive victory.
I never win game time. I'm terrible at game time. This is so exciting. And I think Dave will agree. I volunteered to take a tougher topic than I could have.
I gave her the choice between two game times I had in the hopper. And I'm not going to give out what the other one is because obviously we'll play in the future. But this is the one she chose. And this was definitely the harder of the two. So props to Linda. Yes. All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We grabbed the mic and belted out our impressions of Hulu Presents, a Hulu original of Four Weddings and a Funeral, before going around the dial with stops at A Black Lady Sketch Show, Jane the Virgin, and Big Little Lies. Linda took us to The Good Place for a great canon edition with Dance Dance Resolution. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Linda was also the winner of this week's pilot Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
juggle my balls in the ice cream shop.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm sorry, Augie. It sucked.
And Linda Holmes.
It was dope.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.
You're going to reboot those four dum-dums one more time, and then I'm taking over.
Yay!